Once upon a time, unprompted writing podcast, Lupus, Erin's android, tries to dream, while Izzy's protagonist has a surprise drop through her ceiling. And a special guest Jamie joins us with a short story about a magpie's life on the farm. This week's theme is how to write revenge stories, and our prompt is, there must be revenge for what he did to Duck. Hit the theme tune. Welcome to this week's episode of Prompted, and we are super excited for this week's episode because we've got special guest Jamie on this week, who's written for us before, and so we're really excited to have you on today, Jamie. So, Jamie, how are you, and what do you write?
I'm good. I write everything, anything, but I think the pieces I've sent to you guys before tend to be a little bit sillier and a bit more daft, and that's my favourite things to write.
Yeah, Jamie, I love all the pieces that you sent in our show. I love that you've written so many pieces for this show that we just decided we had to invite you on to be with us because, yeah, we've really loved all of the sort of wild and wacky pieces that you've dropped for us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
The baked bean one, I think, is one of my favourites so far. I think that was season two. That was a while ago, but I love that one stuck in my memory.
Yeah.
The ravioli.
Yes, exactly that one. Yes.
Yeah.
There's news on the ravioli. There's a follow-up story.
There's a follow-up?
Is there?
There is.
Intriguing.
Have you sent it to us or is it?
No, it's going in a little plug in a book I'm releasing soon.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, so tell us about your book.
It's just a collection of short stories that I put together and I finally decided to put them into a book. It's coming out at the end of March.
Oh, that's awesome. You must be so excited. And you've got a blog as well, don't you?
Yes, yeah. Self-indulgent twaddle, which came from my wife, who is the person who comes up with my titles.
I do like your blog. I do like reading all of your little thoughts on the day and stuff. I liked your lockdown blog as well from the first lockdown, was it?
It was the first one, yeah. It kept me going for the first lockdown.
And now we're at lockdown three, the joys.
Well, yeah. So how did everyone find the prompt then?
This was a prompt that I said, and it was stupid when I said it, and it felt even stupider when I tried to write about it. So I really dug myself into a hole. You are, okay, so I am a Star Trek fan. Most people probably know this from the show.
Are you?
And, oh shush. And for Christmas, my brother decided to jokingly get me a Spock rubber duck, which is like a rubber duck that looks a bit like Spock. Like it's got the ears, it's got a little blue shirt. And he then decided to get some googly eyes and over a period of several days, stick them on everything I owned. So I go down to the kitchen for a cup of tea and come back up and just there'd be googly eyes everywhere. And one of the things that he put googly eyes on was Spock Duck. So I vowed to get revenge for his crimes against Spock Duck. It's currently
and
ongoing.
Did you?
Yeah, definitely.
I was going to say, what was the outcome?
Oh, I got some more googly eyes and got my own back. It was brilliant.
Just imagine your house full of googly eyes by now.
Yeah. How did you guys find the ridiculousness of this prompt?
I took that and ran with it.
Wonderful.
I went deep with it. I took the revenge part of it and followed that through, so you'll see how that plays out.
Is there a duck in there somewhere?
No, I wanted to put one in, but I thought it was really hard to fit. It's set in someone's bedroom, and so I thought I'd have to really be reaching to put a duck in it. Oh, there is some water in it. Oh, I should have put some duck in the,
right,
in the water.
I absolutely dare you to ad-lib in that duck as you're reading. Like, you can't edit it, but while you're reading the piece, you've got to slip in a duck somewhere.
I've just put it at a completely random point. You have to, yeah. You'll see it. Okay, I will do it. But first, we've got Jamie's piece. Would you like to introduce your piece?
I will. So mine does have a title, but I'm going to keep it till the end because it will ruin the ending. So I'll tell you the title when I'm finished. Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Yeah, when you're ready.
He had been watching the farmhouse since dawn. Secreted just beyond the gate leading to the yard, he had the perfect vantage point from which to examine every aspect of the building, as well as the comings and going of the family. Hunger pains had come and gone. His legs were so stiff they no longer pained him, all the while he worried they may never function properly again. He needed the toilet more so than he'd ever done in his life. Yet he stayed rigid, his focus fixed ahead on his goal. The farmer had left the building shortly after his vigil had begun. Climbing aboard a tractor, the farmer had driven off down the lane to some distant field and was yet to return. Following this, the family, still at the farm, busied themselves letting out the cows, feeding the pigs and chickens, before mucking out the solitary stable, home to the family's pet donkey. He had watched all of this, noting every movement, looking for patterns, clues to their next move. As much as they pretend otherwise, humans are a predictable species, and predictability was exactly what he needed. With the family busy about their work, his examination of the building had taken little time. Two doors, one to the front, one to the side. 10 windows, all open in the late summer heat. Getting inside would be no problem. Stopping the family escaping in the chaos would be the challenge. Settling on a three-pronged attack, he would divide his forces to cover both doors, while the third team waited around the back to watch for escape. With all this examined, it left only the dogs to plan for, and they would clearly be the biggest obstacle. Three in total, two Great Danes and a collie. They had slept much of the day in the yard, save the occasional stretch or trip to the boundary for the toilet. Despite their slumbering form, their whiskers bristled and ears pricked. Sneaking past them would not work. Speed would be his only defence against the barking and the teeth. He would need to be quicker than he'd ever been before, in and out before the dogs roused from their slumber. Once satisfied his plan would work, he rewarded himself with a stretch before stamping his feet on the spot. Joints creaked as he moved properly for the first time in hours. The farmer would be coming home from the field any moment, and once they were safely inside with their family, the assault could begin. Oh, how did it come to this? Deep down, he'd always known the purpose of the farm, the necessary evils which took place there, fattening up the pigs and chickens only to slaughter them in their prime for the kitchen table, holding cows in pens and milking them to make yogurt and cheese, shearing sheep to clothe otherwise naked people. He had known and accepted the farm for what it stood for. Yes, some animals would suffer and die. The world is a cruel place, after all. And that is not to say he is entirely innocent in all this. They had history, the farmer and he. He had lost count of the items he'd stolen from the farm and the farmhouse. Food, of course, but shiny trinkets as well. On a good day, he regretted his actions. On occasion, he even considered making amends. But not this time. This time the farmer had gone too far. They had acted beyond cruel, and they needed to suffer for it. No amount of thievery could excuse such wanton disregard for basic decency. Away to his right, he could see headlights meandering down the road. The farmer was returning. It was time for action. Behind him lay a freshly reaped field. For row upon row, in every furrow and mound, a mass of crows and sparrows and pigeons were feasting on the chaff left by the combine harvester. Above them, a solitary kite eyed the scene eagerly. From his vantage point on the highest branch of the tree, the magpie squawked, a piercing cry travelling across the field and beyond. A thousand eyes and more shot instantly in his direction. "My fellow avians, listen to me. A great crime has been committed in this farm behind me. An innocent duck, forced to wear Wellington boots and a hat, paraded by the humans for entertainment like a common parrot. A proud duck, directly descended from the mighty dinosaurs, reduced to nothing but a circus performer. A fool. We must right this terrible wrong. We must have our revenge. Fly with me now, my friends. Fly with me, and we will win the day." As the warm glow of the tractor headlights fell upon the farmyard, an endless mass silently rose from the fields beyond. The battle had begun.
Please tell us the title.
So the title is Farm Wars, Revenge of the Duck.
What a bold beginning to the rebellion.
Yes.
In the best possible way, this is like a combination of Animal Farm and Untitled Goose Game.
Yeah.
I didn't know those things could go together, but they did.
As soon as I saw the prompt, I knew that the duck wasn't the one getting revenge. It had to be someone doing it on his behalf.
Yeah, what does the duck think of all this? Like, does the duck like the Wellington boots? Like, maybe the duck's just trying out a new look, you know?
I don't think that's important. I think the magpie has made their decision.
Yeah, the magpie has all the authority.
Yeah. I used to have, in my old house, I used to have some blinds which had ducks in Wellington boots as the pattern. And that I just saw the and I thought, that is what happened to this poor duck.
I love how, like, the magpie is fine with all of the brutalities of a farm. It's just you go too far when you mess with the duck.
Well, but yeah. They're descendants of dinosaurs, if you have some respect.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I did love that bit of the dinosaurs.
But he's not bothered about parrots being made fools of. He is a selective magpie.
Yeah.
Parrots can deal with it.
Oh, it's clever that it is a magpie as well, because isn't it? That does everyone else salute magpies if they're on their own?
No.
No? Is that not a good luck? Is that just in my area? It's like a superstition. If a magpie is lonely, you have to like give it a little salute.
See, in where I grew up, it was that you had to blow it a kiss. That was what you had to do. And then you had to say good morning, Mr. Magpie, where my friend lived, like the legend changes depending on where you are.
I see. Oh, that's really interesting. So I thought you're going off of like a general magpie because everyone's saluting.
No, it's not. That wasn't the idea. But
yeah, I loved that piece. That was a lot of fun. It definitely had your like brand of humour on it as well.
Yeah, don't take anything too seriously is my philosophy.
Izzy, I'm waiting to see how you segue this onto your piece because I've just had a quick look at it and it's almost the opposite philosophy.
Okay, so that's simple, okay, because this is Farm Wars, right? Whereas my piece is set in World War II.
Ah, wonderful.
An effortless segue into it. Yeah, so yeah, mine is set during World War II. What I was doing is while this prompt was sort of in my mind, in my degree, I'm researching and writing a TV script about my great-granddad's war days. And while I was doing that, I happened to go on a tangent and a tangent and tangent in my searches, and I found a true story about something that happened during the war in Germany. And so I decided I had very little information about it, but I thought this is too good not to do a little prompted piece on it. So yeah, that's my piece. And the trigger warnings are, yeah, there's war, so there's mentions of like violence and death and stuff.
The usual stuff we have on this very cheery podcast.
Keeping it light.
The usual stuff. So, if her house is to be set on fire, Ingrid will be the first to light the flame. She brings it to her cigarette and lies back against her headboard. Curlers push into her skull, so she pulls the pins out. Frizzy hair tumbles over her faded nightdress. A younger, brighter Ingrid is locked behind a glass frame on her dresser. She sits on the sands of the French Riviera, laughing at her sister. They ate ice creams after, Ingrid remembers. Or is she getting mixed up with the day they played volleyball? Ingrid rents a house with wide windows because she needs the sunlight to fill her room. She brings her cigarette to her lips and watches the bombs drop through her net curtains. They land just past her old school, a squadron streak across the air. They're British, she thinks, because Americans would flock around the factories instead. A stick of bombs land around Church Street, where her sister used to live. Incendiaries are soon to follow. And finally, a bomb drops through Ingrid's ceiling. Rubble scatters over her body, tucking her into bed. She closes her eyes, waiting for the explosion.
Wakey, wakey, rise and shine,
the bomb says. She was right. They are British. Ingrid opens her eyes. The man dangles from the parachute caught on her chimney. His feet kick at the top of her dresser and blood pools on her bed.
Are you hurt?
She asks in English. He looks down at the blood.
That's not mine.
This isn't the first time Ingrid has been grateful for the knife and her mattress. She holds it out in front of her. Perhaps the man is searching for his own weapon as he reaches in his jacket. Ingrid points the tip of her knife to the hole in the ceiling.
You're paying for that.
Cut me down and I'll nip to the bank,
he says, and frowns as Ingrid shakes her head.
I won't hurt you.
She laughs and brings the knife up to his chest.
How can I trust someone who just bombed my neighbourhood?
Ingrid jumps back as he pulls something out of his jacket. An olive branch. He extends it to her with a small smile. It is fresh, with a few crumpled leaves. Without thinking, she takes it. There is something harmless about a man who carries a fresh olive branch on the off chance he would need the metaphor. She stands underneath him, knife in one hand and the olive branch in another.
I suppose it goes without saying I don't fancy spending the rest of the war in a POW camp,
Oliver says, looking down at Ingrid.
My sister said something similar when she was taken,
she says. He spots the smashed photo of Ingrid and her sister on the floor.
I'm sorry.
Ingrid climbs onto the dresser to hand him a cigarette and lighter. Glass cuts into her feet as she hops back on the carpet, so she sweeps some rubble and a random duck from the bed and sits down. Oliver leans back in his harness and lights his cigarette. They smoke together, both bleeding over the floral duvet, both so deep in their thoughts that they don't hear the first knock at the door.
Why was she taken?
Oliver says, as the last bombs crash into the city. Ingrid looks at the man who fell through her ceiling. His hair is windswept, but she can tell he usually keeps it neat. Hansen darts pull his jacket comfortably around his body, and his pockets are bulging with good luck charms. His lips wear an easy smile, but the expression in his eyes hasn't changed since his plane tore in two.
She was caught giving cigarettes to British airmen,
Ingrid answers. There is another knock at the door.
Ooh. How much of this was a real story? This feels like a very absurdist situation.
Okay, so I was looking up an air raid in Cologne, and someone commented saying that their cousin met her future husband when he fell through her ceiling into her bedroom.
How was he not? How did he survive falling through a ceiling?
That was my question. I was like,
could this be a thatch ceiling?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, how injured do I show this man to be? I don't know how he came through.
All I could picture when you were reading that was Dad's Army with the parachutist. I know it's the opposite way around, but it just felt like Dad's Army all over.
I think the other thing that I took was true was the sister as well being sent off to the prisoner of war camp. So I just put those two things in and tried to, yeah, make them fit together and stuff.
I mean, it works well fitting them together. You couldn't say that there were two different stories.
Did you spot the duck that was put in there?
It was subtle.
I didn't spot the duck. Where was the duck?
It was swept off the pile of rubble.
Oh, I see. Nice one, Izzy. You completed your challenge.
I did, of course I did. Speaking of nice one, Erin always does nice things. Do you ever look at your piece?
My piece is not a nice piece, I'm sorry. This is the part four, I believe, to the sci-fi characters I keep coming back to.
Oh, yeah.
I kept kind of meaning to bring them back this season, and I just never got round to it. So if everyone has forgotten what's in this, I hope there's enough in this piece that you still enjoy it. Okay. Lupus was quite sure that androids could dream, if he tried hard enough. He had seen Calypso sleep, when she collapsed in odd places from exhaustion. In the second pilot's seat, in the cockpit, while he sat at the main controls and watched the stars rush by. On a crate in the cargo bay, when the route from there to her bed seemed just too far to walk. He had tried carrying her to bed once, but he'd nudged the computer interface embedded in her neck, and she'd woken with a yell. He always left her where she fell asleep after that. Calypso sleeping had never bothered him before, but the arrival of two new crew members, the haughty Atherton and the furious Io, meant that he was often the only one awake. The ship's computer, Messiah, would often fall into energy conservation mode as Calypso slept, a side effect of their connection, so Lupus has decided to try and sleep as well. While becoming unconscious was not possible without switching himself off, and Lupus would never willingly do that, he instead lined up some boxes in the room he thought of as his, lay across them, and shut his eyes. He'd asked each of the crew how they dreamt that day. Calypso, half distracted by Messiah's complaints of scratched paintwork on her hull, had little time for him. She'd muttered things about memories, weird monsters, and teeth falling out before putting on her spacesuit. Lupus had been reluctant to ask Io. He was angered by being on the ship in the first place. He found her looking through the cupboards of the medical room. She'd been momentarily curious about his endeavour before remembering that she wasn't speaking to any of the crew except when absolutely necessary, and walked off in a huff. Atherton, surprisingly, had been the most helpful. He had described several of his recent dreams while consuming a large bowl of Hosin duck noodles and an even larger bottle of wine. The clearness of his words reduced at the same rate as the alcohol disappeared, but Lupus found his more cohesive ramblings helpful. So he lay on his boxes and began to search for as many strange things as his memory banks could find. He thought about his first encounter with Calypso, the long hours, days, weeks when his systems had rebooted over and over, waking him with a jolt in the maintenance rig she had strung him up in. He'd been terrified of her at first, the young woman with oil-stained hands and a grim expression. After each brief moment of clarity between a reboot and shutdown, he realised that he was being fixed. He woke to find the rig lowered, letting him stand on two working legs, although his auditory processors now captured sound instead of white noise. The last time, when the final reboot had worked completely, he awoke to see her rare smile. He thought about the time before that. He had fought, he was sure, before he had floated in space, trying to comprehend the void through visual senses that ran cracks through his sight. The faces of the things he fought were a blur. The reason for it was beyond him. Lupus tried to think harder. The work he had been told to do by an automated voice. The shifting realization that this was not the moral thing to do. And that same voice reassuring him that it was, of course it was, and that he needed to hurry up and do it. And at last, he reached the wall of his memory banks, built of corrupted data and hardware damage that not even Calypso could fix. After exactly 6 hours and 23 minutes of attempted dreams, Lupus sat up with a new conclusion. I was fighting for revenge.
Oh, Erin, that's so sweet. That's so powerful.
I'm just bullying this android. I'm so sorry.
it's got a feel of... I was reading Mockingbird the other day, Walter Tevers. And it feels just like Spofforth in the android in Mockingbird.
I haven't heard of Mockingbird. Is it a book?
Yeah, Walter Tevers is the guy who wrote The Man Who Fell to Earth, and he wrote Mockingbird, and he's got a really sad, depressing android in it. Android robot type character. But he just felt like him. It's sad and lonely.
I'll give him a happy ending eventually.
I just want to give him a hug.
if at some point, there'll be a happy crew at some point, just currently they're really not having a good time.
It's the bit when you said he went into the room that he thought of as his own. Like, it's not even his own room. He's just, like, gone into a cupboard and been like, mine. That's what people do. It's just so sweet. And the opening line as well.
I didn't think of it as a cupboard, but now I am picturing this, like, quite chunky robot just sort of squishing down in a cupboard, like, this is mine. I'm taking it.
Yeah, I like the way that he thinks, like, trying to sort of replicate what people do. Like, does he know any other androids?
I don't think so. I think the only scenes that he's actually been in out of the four are... getting broken after escaping from a plan which went very wrong and looking after Io. I feel like that's all he's done, so I wanted to give him a little little bit of his own.
That was very sweet. I really like that.
Thanks. We've certainly gone down in mood this episode.
There's a little theme in all of them, though, because we've got two wars, and then also there's a cockpit in yours, Erin, which made me link it to... war, because I'm looking a lot into planes and things.
Oh, I see, yeah. Speaking of Lupus ending his day with sleep, it's time for us to end the episode.
Sleep.
Don't get away, is he?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much to all of our writers on today's show, and thank you so much to everyone for listening. And yeah, especially thanks for Jamie. Thank you so much for coming on this show, and thank you so much for just doing so much writing for us over the past year as well. We've really appreciated everything that you've written for us.
You're welcome.
So you can find us on our YouTube, which is Prompted Writing Podcast, and you can find us on most podcast platforms. Be sure to leave us a review telling us what you think. For more prompts on writing, find us on Instagram on @Prompted Writing Podcast. And thank you so much again for listening. Hit the outro.